Hello. Thank you for joining me on TL Talks. This is the third ever TL Talks podcast and the first podcast with a normal format. You might be asking yourself, TL, what the hell is a normal format? Well, let me tell you. Normal format of my podcast, originally the idea was to do a TL's thought of the day, followed by football talk, and then my guests lastly. And so that's what I'm going to try to stick to as much as I can. You know, it's not set in stone, but that's the general format I want to follow from now on. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into TL's thought of the day. The first one I'd like to start with is two words, perspective and gratitude. Why did I pick those two words? Well, a lot of reasons. Those are two things that I try to focus on in my life every day, all day. Honestly, I think that there are two things that a lot of people don't focus on or don't have a really good grasp on, unfortunately. And they are game changers, basically. And so let me just explain how I got a good grasp on perspective. So I'm 38 right now, 38 years old. When I was in the military, I was in the United States Navy when I was younger. When I was getting out of the Navy, when I was 32, I was doing my separation physical. And during my physical, the doctor asked me, he's like, says here on the paperwork that you've been bleeding for over a year. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, why wouldn't you get that checked out? I'm like, well, you know, we're on deployment. I don't like going to the doctor. Talking about things in the bathroom is awkward. So I just put it off. He's like, well, that could be pretty serious. So I'm going to refer you to a GI doctor and we'll see what's going on. So I go to a GI doctor. They do a colonoscopy. They find a polyp. They remove the polyp. They say, well, don't worry about it. Most polyps aren't cancerous. We'll call you with the results in 2 weeks. I'm like, okay, no big deal. So I get a call on a Saturday. And it's some doctor, you know, I don't remember his name. He wasn't anybody I ever met. He's like, hey, this is Dr. So-and-so. I was just calling you because we got the results to your whatever it's called, biopsy or whatever test it is where they can see what was in the polyp. He's like, unfortunately, the polyp that we removed, it was a tumor and a very cancerous tumor. So what that means is we're going to have to extend you in the Navy for at least 2 or 3 months and put you through a lot of testing to see if the cancer has spread anywhere in your body. And if it has, we're going to have to deal with it as it comes. So sorry to call you with bad news, but that is kind of where we're at. And so we just need to, you know, obviously schedule you some appointments and get the ball rolling, try to be as proactive as we can to deal with this. So that happened. That happened in real life to me. So of course, you know, nobody thinks they're going to get cancer, especially at 32. Nobody thinks they're going to get, you know, any kind of disease until it happens to you. So that happened. And of course, it shook me up, you know. I definitely wasn't ready to die. I'm still not ready to die. And it was, you know, just really grounding, I guess is the best word to use. So it just put everything in perspective for me. You know, it let me know that life is short. We're not promised tomorrow. You can get cancer, even if you're 32. And as far as, you know, the life that we've lived so far, it really put in perspective, you know, what I've done and what I haven't done. You know, how much of an underachiever I had been my whole life up until then, how I had all this potential I wasn't doing anything with, and how my story was really more of a sad story than any kind of anything triumphant, you know. So fortunately, I was clear of the cancer. Went through a whole bunch of tests. We caught it early. It hadn't spread anywhere. Didn't have to do chemo or anything, so I got really lucky. But I was cleared of it. So after that, I was able to move on with my life. That's when I moved to Denver, Colorado. And ever since then, I've pretty much been kicking ass and taking names. So especially like when I first got here, I think it was because the cancer was so fresh. You know, I just was really determined to, you know, really kick life's ass, basically. I was like, okay, no more of this story of me being this underachiever and pretty much, you know, let's do it. Let's change the story. So that's what happened. And I was just, everything I touched to gold, everything I touched in Denver turned to gold. You know, I applied for a job and got a better job. Started coaching a team and the team did good. You know, bought my first house a year later. Just everything was just falling into place and it really felt like Denver was where I was supposed to be. So that was kind of the turning point in my life where I didn't do very good with perspective until then, but then that really helped me get perspective on life and how delicate it is, and how, you know, you're not promised tomorrow, so why would you not kick the shit out of today? You know what I'm saying? So that was perspective for me, and I think I've done a decent job of holding on to perspective ever since. When I say gratitude, I know it sounds cliche, but if you really grasp perspective and gratitude, like really, really grasp it. When I say gratitude, I'm talking about, like, do you realize how many things you should be grateful for? Like, you don't really think about it, right? Like, you don't think about it. When you wake up in America in your comfy bed and you go to your job or do whatever with your day, you're not thinking about somebody in a third world country that doesn't have a bed, right? Or they don't know when they're going to eat next, or, you know, just all this stuff that we take for granted. Like, they don't have shoes, they don't have health care. Like, just the list goes on and on. Some people wake up and they don't have sight. They don't have, you know, arms or legs, or, you know, I mean, just there's a long list of things that some people don't have that we do have. We wake up every day and just take them for granted. And that sucks. That sucks because it's not promised to you. You don't really, you know, like, it could be gone tomorrow, right? But the thing that sucks about human nature is it's hard to hold on to that. Like, it's easy to have a quick conversation with your friend and say, yeah, we're super, like, blessed and fortunate to have what we have. But then it just goes away, right? Like, it's not a everlasting thought in your mind throughout the day. Like, how fortunate you are, how, you know, just keeping that perspective. So that's the frustrating part. I think I do a better job than most. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I think it's true. I think that the cancer definitely helped, but I really mindfully try to wake up every single day, and I do mean every day, with a grateful heart. So when I say gratitude, I try to wake up every day thankful that I woke up, thankful that I have a job, thankful that I have a roof over my head, thankful that I have an awesome dog. I mean, I just a lot of things that they're to be thankful for. So try to keep that in the front of my mind. What I'll tell you is, if you wake up with a grateful heart, it's really hard to have a bad day. Like, really hard. Maybe even impossible. Because if you're too busy being grateful for everything you have, it's kind of hard to have a pity party for yourself, right? That those two things can't exist, like, simultaneously. So that's kind of just what I wanted to share with you guys. Perspective and gratitude. If you can implement those in your life, it literally can change your life, because the problem with humans are they usually don't get perspective or enough gratitude until something crazy happens. And it could be too late. You know, it could be the end of your life. And so if you're able to get that gratitude and perspective before something crazy happens, please do. And you might be asking me, how the hell do I do that? Well, there's things that can trigger that, right? You could go on a missions trip to a third world country and help people and see them, you know, in front of your face that are less fortunate than you. That could do it. You could, you know, join the military and be on deployment and see how deployment feels, and then be, you know, grateful for not being on deployment when you're out. You can go, you know, feed the homeless. There's a lot of things you can do, humanitarian things, that can kind of trigger that in you, right? It can give you perspective. It can show you how fortunate you are, and show you how other people don't have what you have. So I would encourage you to do that. Like I said, it can be a game changer. It's really powerful stuff. Like, I'm not the master of it. I don't have it all figured out. But after the cancer scare, I mean, it literally changed me, you know, for the better the rest of my life. I have a grasp on perspective and gratitude way more than ever before. And it's still currently, I do a decent job at it. But what sucks about human nature is, what I've found is that when something happens and you feel a certain way about it and it changes you, unfortunately, even that is temporary. Well, maybe for other people it's not, but for me it is. Like, even that, even a cancer scare and me thinking I might die, you know, I was kicking ass when I first moved to Denver, and I've been here for 6 years now, and, you know, I can't say that I still have the zest that I had when I first moved here, right? Like, after a while, it fades a little bit. And that really sucks. I'm not proud to say that. I'm just being honest with you guys. But that's the thing that sucks about human nature. It's just really hard to hold on to that. that perspective. But there's my advice. Those are my two cents. Those are two really big things in my life I wanted to share with you guys. And so I appreciate you listening. But yeah, gratitude and perspective. Get in there. All right, so moving on to football talk. Let's go ahead and start with my beloved Brownies, shall we? So the Browns, as you know, got killed by the Titans in their first game. And then I told you guys last week that I was pretty optimistic about the upcoming game against the Jets on Monday Night Football. Now, I was optimistic because I believe we're going to fix our mistakes. Baker and Freddie Kitchens were going to be held, you know, hold people accountable. And I just felt confident that we're going to beat the Jets because we're better than them. Well, not only are we better than them, but we had a few things go our way, right? So a few days before the game, they announced that Sam Darnold had mono and he wasn't going to play. I believe they announced that Quinnen Williams, who's a stud D tackle from Alabama, wasn't going to play. I want to say that CJ Mosley was also not going to play. So those are three really good players that weren't playing. And I'm like, oh boy. We were already going to win, in my opinion. This might get ugly. Then, as if all that wasn't bad enough for them, during the game, their backup quarterback, who's Trevor Siemian, got injured by a hit from Myles Garrett. So that was really unfortunate. I felt bad. Myles Garrett wasn't trying to hurt him or play dirty. He just hit him hard and, you know, fell on his leg and, tore some ligaments. So he was out for sure. So we were playing against their third-string quarterback, which, you know, his last name's Falk. I think he actually was a pretty good college quarterback. But definitely, you know, the odds were definitely against them. So we ended up winning pretty decisively about 23-3. So my two cents on that is, they won. They took care of business. Granted, it was depleted, injured Jets team, but they're still NFL team. They still were on Monday Night Football. They still were at home against their fans, and they definitely were trying. Le'Veon Bell was trying, but we took care of business. And so that's encouraging, right? They did what they're supposed to do. They beat a team they're supposed to beat, and they looked a hell of a lot better than they did against the Titans. Now, moving on. Next week, I think it's Sunday night, they're playing the Rams. Now, that's a whole different ball of wax. The Rams are not anywhere close to the Jets. The Rams are the defending NFC champs, as you know, and that game is going to be tough. Fortunately for us, it's in Cleveland. So I asked myself, I said, self, can I talk myself into the Browns beating the Rams? Realistically, you know, don't put your, you know, Baker Mayfield sunglasses on. Look at it realistically. Can I realistically tell myself or talk myself into that the Browns are going to beat the Rams at home Sunday night? And I kind of, you know, compared them side by side, their games so far, their stats, you know, pros and cons, home and away, stuff like that. And I got to be honest with you. There's only two things that really jumped off the page at me that the Rams were better at. That was rush defense for them. Rush defense is pretty solid. And also their running back. So Todd Gurley's stats are a little bit better than Nick Chubb's. And so you could assume that, I mean, that's not all the running back, right? There's obviously the line's blocking for them. But his stats are better. And so you could say that Gurley might have a more productive night than Chubb on Sunday. But those are the only two things. So for me, if those are plus two for them, now I have to see, can I get plus two for the Browns to get back to even, right? Because if you get back to even, then it's a coin toss. Here's how I got back to even. You can laugh at me, you can call me a homer, but whatever. This is how I feel, and we'll see if I'm right. The way I got back to even, one was it's in Cleveland. I believe that will matter. That's one. Two, I believe that Baker Mayfield is going to take a step forward in the right direction. So first game was horrible for him. He threw three picks when we were down, was forcing it, pick sixes, got ugly. It is what it is. Second game, he threw one pick and one interception, or sorry, one touchdown and one interception. Touchdown was beautiful. It was a quick slant to Beckham. He took it all the way to the house, 80-some yards. Beautiful. Just turned on the Jets. And it was nice. The interception, I wouldn't really fault Baker too much for. He threw it to a receiver that was, covered, but he could have made the play. The DB made a crazy play. He, like, jumped over him, batted the ball in the air, then intercepted it. So the same guy that batted it intercepted it. Just a phenomenal play by the DB. So I'm not really faulting Baker for that interception. It was just a great play. But 1-1 for touchdowns, interceptions. It's a decent game, right? Like, not a great game, but his completion percentage was really good. And so I was encouraged by that. He bounced back like I thought he would. Didn't have a great game, but had a solid game, right? So much better than the Titans game. This is how I get +2 for the Browns. I think, and granted, I'm a huge Baker supporter, I think Baker will take another step forward and have a great game against the Rams. So we need, and mark my words, we need Baker to throw multiple touchdowns against the Rams to win. And I think he will throw multiple touchdowns against the Rams, and we will win. So what is my prediction? I think the Browns will win in a close one, 3-4 points. And Baker will have to throw between 2 and 4 touchdowns to win, which he can do. He's shown it before. He can do it again. And that's pretty much it. So that's how I talk myself into it. Believe it or not, even though the Browns got killed in the first game, if you look at the stats and all that stuff with the Browns and the Rams, there's really not a huge difference. They're, like I said, the only two things that jumped out was the rushing stats and the rush defense for the Rams. Besides that, we're fairly even, believe it or not. And so, yeah, I'm picking the Browns to win. And we'll see. Maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm not. But, yeah, I got Browns by 3 or 4. Moving on to Ohio State. Ohio State played Indiana. Yeah, that was week 3, Indiana. Yeah, so they were 2-0, and we were 2-0. So that was supposed to be, you know, competitive. You know, we had just blown out Cincinnati 42-0. Indiana was doing pretty good so far this season. So the spread was kind of respectable. You know, it was, I don't know, maybe between 17 and 20-some points. So it wasn't supposed to be a blowout, but what do you know? It was a blowout. Ohio State cruised. I think the final was 51-10. Ohio State's just playing really well. I know I'm biased because they're my team, but they're just really well coached. We have a lot of talent. You know, Justin Fields is lighting it up. Our running back is really impressive. We just have a really good team. And so this week we're playing Miami of Ohio. That's going to be a blowout. They're not, I mean, I think even their head coach admitted something that was kind of embarrassing for their team about, you know, his chances against Ohio State. So that's going to be a blowout. I think in a few weeks we're going to start hitting, you know, the Big Ten teams and having some tough games. And so that'll be interesting to see how those go. But so far, so good. And so I'm gonna enjoy seeing them roll Miami of Ohio and keep the wins coming. Next subject. You guys are going to like this one. The Pittsburgh Steelers. My most hated team, and it's not close. So, if you guys remember in the first podcast, I talked to Chris Cola, who works for the Browns, and we talked about Big Ben and the Steelers and the Browns' chances this year and predictions and yada, yada, yada. So during that one, I told Chris, if you remember, this year was the year for me to face the music when it comes to Ben Roethlisberger. I'm not a fan of his, never have been. I don't like him as a person, don't like him as a quarterback. I think he's always been overrated, but there's a lot of people that disagree with me. A lot of people that think that he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. A lot of people that think he's great, yada, yada, yada. And I strongly disagree. So the reason I was looking forward to this season is because since AB and Le'Veon both left the Steelers, I'm like, well, if Ben is a Hall of Famer, the Steelers are going to win and he's going to ball out without those guys. And we're going to see that it doesn't matter who he has. He's just great. And he can make anybody else great, right? Still with me? Okay. But if he doesn't, then TL was right, and Ben is not a Hall of Famer, and that's going to feel real good. Well, what do you know, folks? Guess what happened in week 2? Week 1, they got spanked by the Pats. Week 2, they lost again. And in I think the second quarter of the second game, oh, Big Ben is hurt. Big Ben has an elbow injury. Oh, how convenient. The Steelers are 0-2. Your offense can't move the ball and score for the first time in maybe ever. Oh, and you're injured. You're injured. So now we don't get to see you play a full season without AB and Le'Veon. We don't get to see you prove your greatness without those guys there. Oh, that's convenient. So, yeah, that's all I'm going to say about it. I think it's a very convenient injury. Now they're going to have their backup, Rudolph, which I actually like him, which is annoying. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see how they do. Hopefully they crash and burn because I want, you know, just to be a two-way race with the Browns and Ravens. But, I mean, they've always been a winning team. So if they are able to pull this season off and be a winning team, that'll be really impressive because they have not had a good start. And if they can win with their backup quarterback, pretty much I think their only chance is if Rudolph turns out to be a stud. You know what I mean? If he was just like that guy waiting in the wings that was just going to tear it up whenever he got his chance, then they could win some games and make it a race in the North. But I'm obviously hoping that doesn't happen, but we'll see. That's my two cents on the Steelers. Moving on to fantasy football. So this is a little treat for you guys. I am a fan. Well, I'm a football fanatic in general, but I am a fantasy football fan. I'm currently in six different leagues. I know, which sounds ridiculous, but whatever. So I'm in six different leagues, and every single week I do homework on fantasy football to see, you know, who are good players to pick up, you know, waiver wire guys, and just do that extra work just to see, you know, who I can get. If somebody's not performing, I can swap them out. Stuff like that. So I want to share that with you guys going forward. I'm going to give you all my, you know, waiver ads for fantasy football. And if you want to take my advice, have at it. If you don't, that's cool too. But I did all the work for you. So just reap the benefits. So some waiver wire pickups. I only picked the guys I think that were in, like, the percentage of them being owned was like 70, mid 70s or below, right? So if it was 80 or above, there's no reason to put them on the list because there's somebody else has them. So it's, you know, not worth talking about. But here's the guys that were mid 70s or below that you could pick up on the waiver wire for this week based on last week's results. So QB is Garoppolo, Brissett, and Keenum. Running back is Barber, Gore, and Hyde. Wide receiver is two guys named Samuel. So Samuel from the Panthers, and I believe the other Samuel is from the Niners. John Ross, John Brown, Devin Smith. Devin Smith is a good pickup because, wait a minute, they say, I think it's Michael Gallup that is out for the Cowboys. And so he's kind of like their number two receiver behind Amari. So since Michael Gallup is out for 2 or 3 weeks, that's what makes Devin Smith a good pickup temporarily, in my opinion. Then McLaurin from the Redskins, Ohio State Buckeye, by the way. Chark from the Jaguars, he played tonight, so that's a little bit late. Renfro from the Raiders, and Aguilar for the Eagles. Aguilar had a grueling drop against the Falcons, but Deshaun Jackson's out for a few weeks, so it doesn't matter. He's still going to get targets because Deshaun's not playing. Two tight ends are Olsen and Witten. Defenses are the Patriots, Niners, Packers, Bills, and Cowboys. And lastly, individual defensive players, just in case your league has those. The guys that had good games were Hargraves from Tampa Bay, Martinez, Jayon Brown, Jerome Baker, Jalen Smith, Collins, Cunningham, Trevathan, Roquan Smith, Neal, and my boy Joe Schobert from the Cleveland Browns. So that's what I have for fantasy football pickups. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I'll keep that going the whole season, just so you guys have that as a perk, just in case you want some advice. And lastly, before I get into my interview, is the team that I'm coaching, Denver Bandits. So they are obviously in their off season. Our season, like our game season, goes from about April to July. So this is the off season. We don't officially start practice until January. But they had a football 101 chalk talk tonight, which is really cool for, you know, new players to learn the basics about football. You know, in women's football, there's a lot of new players that don't know much. You know, that's totally fine. I mean, just the fact that you're coming out and playing is awesome. And that's what coaches are for, to teach you no matter where you're starting. So we had a 101 talk tonight. We have our second tryout coming up. I think we have three tryouts total and some other chalk talks too. We have offensive chalk talk, defensive chalk talk. And so it's going to be cool. We've only had one tryout so far. That one tryout was awesome. We had some veterans there, obviously, some new players. There's a couple new players. Well, there's a lot of new players that I'm stoked about. There's a couple that I'm like salivating about because they're just great athletes. Like I just cannot wait to see them ball out in games just because, you know, they're fast and quick and they can catch and they're just, yeah, it's good stuff. So, yeah, I can't wait. That's just a quick summary on the Bandits. They're called the Denver Bandits if you want to look them up and support them. Awesome team. They're only in their second year, so we're still building. But they have a nice coaching staff, really good athletes, and we're only getting better, right? Like, we've only had one tryout. We have two more coming up, and we're only going to get bigger and better from here. So, super stoked about the upcoming season. So, without further ado, I'm going to show you guys the interview that I had. So, this week's interview was with Chris Garza. Chris Garza is the head coach of the Nevada Storm. The Nevada Storm is a team in the WFA, and they're the team that won the D3 championship this year. So I was actually at that game because it was in Denver. They beat the Orlando Anarchy in that game, and that's the first time I ever got to watch them in person. But yeah, I was just super impressed with their team. You know, they're champions now, and just based on what I saw, they're definitely, you know, worthy of being on the podcast. I want to give them some exposure, you know, talk to their head coach, dig in a little bit about their organization. And it was a really enjoyable interview. It lasted about an hour, but I want to give you a warning. You guys are going to laugh at me about this, but since the phone reception in my last interview was kind of shoddy, I'm like, okay, let me like drive to a neutral location where I have good cell service. And then maybe that'll just fix it. I'll just like go somewhere, park, do the interview in my car, no surrounding noise, and then I'll be good to go. So I did that tonight, believe it or not. It's embarrassing, but I did. I went to, you know, about 2 miles up the road, had this interview with Chris, and it was all good, right? Like, I think there's only a couple times where his voice went out a little bit, but most part, it was golden. With like 2 minutes left in the interview, the call drops, and I'm like, son of a bitch. So we almost did it, folks. We'll get there eventually. In a couple years, maybe I'll have like a studio where I can have, you know, all this fancy equipment and do calls that way. But for now, I'm just going to doing the best I can. So bear with me. But anyways, without further ado, this is Chris Garza from the Nevada Storm. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Here you go.
I'd like to welcome Chris Garza, head coach of the Nevada Storm. First of all, Chris, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you taking some time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I'm really excited to do this tonight.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. So the way I structured it, you told me earlier that you had listened to my first two interviews, which I really appreciate that, first of all. But as you know, kind of the structure of the way I do my interviews, what I kind of have to start with is kind of your background, right? And what I was saying earlier to you is the unique thing about this interview is you're the first person that I'm interviewing that I don't know personally. You know, I had known Molly Goodwin before. Obviously, I played college football with Chris Cola. But I've never met you before. I've watched your team in person at least once, and I've heard about you guys in the past, but never met you in person. So I don't know that much about you personally, and I don't know that much about the Nevada Storm. So this is going to be not only educational for my listeners, but also myself. So if you don't mind, let's start with just your background. You can tell me, you know, where you're from originally, where you went to school, if you played football, how long you've coached football, and, you know, what you do in your personal life as far as work, you know, whatever you're willing to share.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate you taking the time to interview me and talk about the Nevada Storm.
Absolutely.
For me, my background would have to start back in high school. I did play some high school football in Tulia, Texas, a really small town in Panhandle, Texas. About a town of 5,000. It's in between Lubbock and Amarillo.
Okay.
Middle of nowhere. Played ball there humbly for 4 years. And then after that, kind of football left my life for a while. And, you know, I was down and out, didn't like what was going on or any of the process that I was living through. So I had to incorporate football somewhere back in my life and got into youth coaching back in 2009. From there, I coached in the Sierra Youth Football League out here in Nevada. and did that for 6 years with the team, and went on to high school, coach high school with them at Sparks High School. From there, last year, I coached at Coral Academy as just an assistant coach, assistant defensive coach. And that's where I'm at to now. However, the one thing I'm kind of leaving out here is one of those people. One thing that remained consistent was I got the honor to have my mentor be with me alongside of all those years that I was coaching football, and that was Adam Barrett. He's our assistant head coach for the Nevada Storm. So, so for me to say that. I've had a long, you know, from where I've come to now, I've had a long row. I've had a lot of help with Adam Barrett being there for me. But, you know, I never really played a lot of football outside of high school or youth league in Texas. I'm undersized for the spot I was at. You know, I played a little bit of what we now call a rover. You know, but coaches didn't know what to call it back then. I think they're calling something like a monster back or a blitz backer or something crazy like that. But so I was an undersized outside linebacker. So, you know, being 6 foot tall, 205 pounds in high school football where I was at, that's kind of big. But you get outside of my town, you know, that's pretty small for a linebacker.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, now I've been coaching the Nevada Storm for 3 years. This is my second year as the head coach. My third year, well, it's my second year as defensive coordinator. The first year I came on, I came on as the offensive coordinator, which I thought was a lot of fun. But it just really didn't play out to our strengths, and we didn't do very well that year. And I think the continuity of our coaches was really lacking that year, and our season really told the tale of that.
Gotcha. So, first question. Thanks for sharing your background. I appreciate that. So, my first question would be, since I don't know that much about the Nevada Storm, what can you tell me about their history? Like, how long have they been around? You know, what leagues have they been in, stuff like that?
I think they've been around, oh gosh, I think 12 years now. They started out as a sevens team, and then they you know, built themselves up to what they are now. They started off, you know, I couldn't even tell you what was the true conference they started, or the true league they started in. You know, there was the IWSL, there was the WFA. I think they went on hiatus from WFA for a little bit, went to the IWFL when I joined in. And then as soon as we can get back in the WFA, I voted that we go back, you know. It's a great organization. They're very diplomatic about it. If you have concerns or anything, they're willing to listen. And I think that's what really separates the WFA from a lot of the other leagues.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a fair answer because, you know, if you've been coaching them for 3 years, I can't really expect you to know what they were doing 12 years ago. But yeah, no, that's good, man. I didn't know much. Like, I know about that team because basically, you know, I've been involved with women's football for about 6 years now. I've coached two different teams. And ever since I've been involved, I've kind of nerded out on the sport. You know, I didn't even – like a lot of people, I didn't even know it existed. And so once I started coaching, I was like, oh, man, I need to educate myself. You know what I mean? I'm kind of a student of the game naturally. So I wanted to, you know, kind of make my rounds and make some good connections with people, you know, as far as networking and stuff like that. And just at least, you know, feel like I'm an educated person about the sport. And during that time, I think one of the first times I heard about the Nevada Storm was because you guys had played a game, I think, against the Utah Falcons. Is that accurate? Have you guys played them a few times?
Oh, yeah, a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. So when you guys played them, I mean, I've coached against Utah Falcons, I want to say, maybe a total of six times, six to eight times. Then I've coached with their team at least once. There was a Hall of Fame game in Las Vegas that they invited me to. I kind of just took up space. I wouldn't really say I coached, but so I was technically with them as a coach once too. But anyways, my point is that since they were, you know, usually on my schedule, I would pay attention to who they were playing, right? And so when I saw that they were playing the Nevada Storm a couple times, you know, I saw like who they were playing, if it was home and away, you know, what the score ended up being. And the tough thing about the Utah Falcons, we're going to talk more about this, but as you know, the tough thing about the Utah Falcons is since they are the Utah Falcons, you know, and they do have, you know, around 60 players or whatever it is every year, and they do run, you know, a system that is hard to defend, you know, if your players aren't very disciplined and if you don't have the numbers, you know, to deal with their platoon system of subbing players out, you know, it's kind of uphill battle. So when those scores, you know, when you see a lopsided score against Nevada Storm or against my team or whoever the hell it is, it's really hard to gauge that, right? That could be because the other team's horrible, or it could be because the other team's good and Utah is just, you know, that much better, or that they have that much depth. And so that was kind of hard, you know, to gauge your guys' you know, power rankings based on that, because, you know, it's just like I said, playing Utah is, you know, kind of a different mixed bag there. But yeah, that's how I knew about you guys initially. And then this year was the most educated I feel like I became, because I got to watch you guys in person. So, you know, I had the lucky privilege of not only the WNFC championship being in Denver, but also the WFA championship. And so as a, you know, women's football fan, I was in heaven. And so I got to watch those games in person. And that was really, really cool. I can't wait to dive into that later. But yeah, let's go ahead and start with, if you don't mind, I guess, let's see. You've been with them for 3 years. You were offense coordinator, defense coordinator, and head coach. You said that when you're offense coordinator, you didn't feel like the team was doing that great. And so,
oh, no. I am not an offensive coordinator at all. I've always been a defensive coordinator, and so I definitely stepped that style, and then we stepped into the role of what we are now.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, I appreciate your honesty, man. That's a very humble thing for you to say. So let's just dive into Nevada itself before we start talking about Falcons and WFA championship and stuff like that. So your team,
absolutely.
So I don't know much about your team as far as, you know, the inner workings of it. Tell me a little bit about the coaching staff. I did see when I was at the game, I saw the coaching staff on the sideline. It seemed like you guys had a lot of coaches. And the thing that stuck out to me was it seemed like a lot of young coaches, which isn't really bad or good. You know, it doesn't, because you're young doesn't mean you don't know what you're doing, or, you know, I just noticed that their ages seem a little bit younger than what I usually see. But tell me a little bit about your coaching staff as far as the inner workings, right? Tell me if, like, these are, you know, if these are coaches that you recruited, right, like handpicked them, or if they kind of were all there when you got there, or, you know, how they all kind of joined the team.
I think that everybody that was there, everybody there, we definitely want there, and everybody, we vetted all of our coaches this year. You know, before this year, I mean, there was three of us, and that I could say, you know, we had a base to build on. Like I told you before, Coach Adam and I had been coaching together for almost 10 years at this point, and I said, hey, listen, we're going to take over this team. I know we can do this with the group of ladies we got. Come check it out. He's the head coach for Coral Academy here in Reno, a high school, a charter high school here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in all reality, he'd probably be the head coach for this team. However, you know, he doesn't have the time, and he's been mentoring me throughout the whole, you know, all my football life. So I felt like this was the time for me to step up and take charge of the team and still have my best friend helping me out on the sidelines, which I think is a big, you know, a big advantage over a lot of other teams. The coaches that we have there, Don Rue was the one that was with us for, has been there with us for the longest. I met him I think it was the first year, and then he started coaching my second year, like my first year head coaching. He started really consistently coaching with us, and coming into this year, I knew we needed him on our team, so we had to ask him to come back. The other guys that we had reached out to, one of them reached out to us and said, "Hey, I'd love the opportunity to coach," and he became our running backs and our fifth coach. Don Rue does their line. Tristan Nash is a player of Adam Barrett. So when it comes down to knowing what we want done in the offense, he's already attuned to it. So he was an easy pick for us. I had my brother Cruz out there. He was a superb linebacker for our high school. So we needed his knowledge out there for us as well. And then of course you had myself and Adam Barrett. Coach Jared's also a quarterback's coach, receivers coach. He did a great job with our receivers this year. He really got a couple of our players up to par, some of our rookies up to par. So he definitely put in a big hand of work this year. We had a great staff, and I think the continuity of us coming back together, at least knowing each other, and then saying, "Hey, this is a super team. You want to be a part of this?" And then the next question is, what's important to you? Is it yourself, or is it the ladies? And it better be the ladies. And so we just changed the focus of everything from the actual team itself to the players. And so I made sure that every position had a coach. And if there's any questions, they're going to get them. And the major difference was that everybody on our coaching staff had a continuity between one another.
Gotcha. So my next question would be, when you say you vetted all your coaches, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that there's like a board of owners? Was it the head coach and owner? But you know, like, what do you mean by vetted?
That's just between me and my assistant coach, Adam. You know, he calls me up, says, "Hey, I think this guy's a good fit." Just talk to him and say, "Hey, show up on Saturday. We'll talk it out." And usually it works to a good thing. Or you know, the main focus of the coaches is they have to be able to fall in line. They have to be able to be coached as well as coach. And they also have to understand that these ladies deserve nothing but the best from us. And it's our job to deliver a championship to them for working hard.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So, yeah, you're saying between you and your assistant coach, it's kind of just an informal, you know, like, man-to-man talk. You meet up, you know, on a Saturday, maybe before practice, talk to them, you know, let them know what's expected of them, kind of feel them out a little bit, and then with a very small amount of time, kind of figure out if they're a good fit or not.
Oh, yeah. We just want to make sure that everybody there is doing positive things for the ladies.
Yeah, gotcha. All right, fair enough. All right, so yeah, man, I think you guys have a pretty solid coaching staff. It's pretty awesome, especially for a D3 team, you know, to see a full coaching staff. I know that when I first started coaching my former team, I mean, shit, man, the the first year, I remember, you know, having 23 players in the team total, 6 players at practice. I remember going to away games and me being the only coach that went, you know what I mean? And it's kind of brutal as far as trying to do everything yourself, you know, make a depth chart for offense, defense, special teams. But I'm not really complaining, you know, because it made me a better coach. And when you kind of have to, you know, make it work with the bare minimum, then when you have more than that, you just feel spoiled. But I can definitely relate as far as, you know, going from where you were. But my point is that for you guys to have a full staff, especially as a D3 team, is really cool. Like you said, all those positions need to be coached. And one of the saddest things is in our sport, we see a lot of teams that have, you know, players not coached at all, you know, or they don't have, you know, whatever it is. You know, they don't have a line coach. Or
you see that or you see the coach on the sideline while the game's going on. Those are the things that really peeve me. You know, I think that a lot of the continuity in coaching is really going to pay off, and you see that in the championship teams now. The coaching staff that are there, and I think the Renegades touched on it last Friday. You know, the coaching staff really likes one another, and it's crazy to think. Well, if you don't fit in with us, you're not gonna work with us. But don't get me wrong, we will show anybody how to coach if they're there for the right reasons.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's totally fair. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about is recruiting. Before you answer that, so when I went to the D3 game, I did not expect a few different things. So what I expected to happen, like the result of the game and how the game was going to go, and I mean, granted, I'd never watched you guys play before, so that was kind of a shot in the dark. But there's a few things that surprised me. One of those was how many players you guys had. I thought what you guys had, especially at the championship game, you know, it's the last game of the year, you know, you have injuries, you know, some players quit, whatever happens. But the last game of the year, you know, you have whatever you finish with. And so I guess my first question would be, how many players did you start the season with? Then how many did you have at the championship game? Because I know what I would estimate that you had, but I didn't really count them. You know what I'm saying? I would say that it was somewhere in the mid-20s, but what are those two answers to start with?
We signed up and started with, I think it was 31.
Okay.
31, and then we had a few drop out before season.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple injuries before season. Mm-hmm. And then during the season, we don't discuss injuries publicly during the season, but at the championship, we had 24. We had 24 suited.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the biggest misconception is the size of our team, and because people see the six-man coaching staff, they see the, you know, the 23, 24 players suited, the injured player always there. We have, you know, at the championship, we had, what, two wives on the field, well, three. And then we also had, typically at any given game, at home game, we had three or four ball girls that help on the sidelines as well. It looks like we have a massive team, when we really don't. We just have a huge support system. And really, I think that's one of the other secrets that we've had come together for us this year.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that night we had 24, and I think that was a big talk. Was like, well, look at both sidelines, look at the other sideline, and look at that. And I think that was one of the hot topics that night. I think it was a big question for me as far as should we move up in the division or should we move down. Listen, this is our first year. Did well. We don't have the numbers yet. Thinks that we have. You know, we want to see where this is going. We're just as excited as everybody else to be here. We just need to make sure that we are the real deal. We want to make sure that we stabilize something here in our area that be a big foothold women's football.
Gotcha. So. You started the season with 31. You dressed, you said 24 at the championship, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So obviously, I know if you're not telling you what to do. You know, it's your team. You do whatever you want. But I would say based on just that alone, that's definitely, you know, based on the WFA structure, you know, those are D3 numbers. You know what I mean? Not based on coaching, not based on talent, not based on, you know, your professionalism.
Correct.
But just, you know, as far as roster attrition, you know what I mean, and having numbers.
Right.
And being able to get through a game and not, you know, be able to still finish the game.
Playing on
the 11, you know.
You know, we plan on growing, and we plan on getting bigger. And if that means us it's a D2D giveaway, then so be it. But I mean, once those 20 other, you know, once we get 10 or 15 more people on the team, and we start looking, you know, like a Utah Falcon team looking at other teams, and I think that's when we start saying, hey, maybe we should move up, or even, I think at some point in time, we're going to challenge ourselves to move up even without having to need to. I think at some point in time that is coming.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear, man. Yeah, I mean, like I guess I have a very small sample size of what I know about your team and what I've seen. But what I've seen is impressive. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to kiss your butt or anything, but I have a very high standard just for myself. I'm just, I guess that's the way I was raised. And so when I'm watching women's football teams, you know, I know what to look for, what teams should look like, you know, what team looks like if they don't have their shit together, stuff like that. And so just, I was really impressed with you guys, you know, as far as how the game went, how it was coached, how you guys presented yourself. I mean, Orlando had a small, you know, small roster that made it to Denver, but they're still, you know, D3 defending champs, and they definitely didn't give up the whole game. And so, they didn't give it to you, for sure.
Oh man, they're a great team, and if you're listening to Pistol Bell, don't quit. Play another year, or come play for us. but keep playing. Crystal Bell had a great night against us. Just one heck of a ball player, and I think that was a great game to watch for you. If that was your first game to see us play, that was a great one to watch it. It was a little boring for the defense on the defensive side. I take credit for that. I called a very conservative game, and I you know, this next year I kind of said, hey, no more Mr. Nice Guy. What we're going to do is we're going to start putting a lot of pressure where we need to, and pick our coverages well. And I think we did a great job of disguising our coverages and what we were doing and what we wanted to do. And I think that was effective for us this year.
Gotcha. All right, so before we start talking about that championship game, let's touch on recruiting before I forget. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah, so you started off 31. You ended the season with 24. I know you can't speak for 12 years ago because you weren't there, but let's just talk from 3 years ago because that's when you joined. From 3 years ago until now, the numbers have went from, you know, A to B. What have you seen? Has it been like way more players or the same amount of players or better players, or how have you been able to recruit? Because you have some really quality athletes, and so that's cool. But
I think that we changed the focus of where we were recruiting, and I think that's shown in our results. We're now starting to go out and not just, you know, rely on the website or flyers at a parade, you know. We're actually going out to events in our community. The ladies are volunteering their own time to great causes. People see this in the community, and they really want to be a part of that. Not just for the, you know, football aspect, but, you know, for the actually community charity and just working and volunteering in our neighborhood, you know. I think that we've gained a lot of traction from that. Our coaches have been very aggressive on going out and finding new recruits, and we're challenging, you know, our staff to see if there's anything that they can come up with to find those players. If there is a player out there that wants to play for us, that's, you know, lives somewhere else, call us, contact us, let us know. We'd love to hear from you and see what we can work out. But we'd rather have everybody that's here, just the way we operate, the mentality of our team is, you got to be here to play.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no special treatment. That's how it should be. Gotcha. Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into the WFA Championship. So like I said, I was there in person. I got to watch it. I'm glad I was there. I wasn't sure how the game was going to go. What I was alluding to earlier was, there's a few things that surprised me. So I had watched, I had watched Orlando Anarchy play in two championships before that, right? So 2 years before that, they had played, I believe it was Arkansas, and they had lost Arkansas, which is remarkable because Arkansas had about 15 players. They were playing, you know, Iron Man the whole game, and they just were in great shape, well-coached, and they just beat them, just flat-out beat them. It was really impressive to watch. And then last year, Orlando got their revenge, you know, and played, I think it was Arkansas again, and this time they just demolished them. And you could see Arkansas...
That's with Coach Tony, right?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. So they killed, if my memory is right, they killed Arkansas last year in the WFA and won the championship for the first time. And I was like, wow, that was really special. And it was crazy, like, if you put those two games side by side, how different it was. You know what I mean? Just, I'm not sure if Orlando had some new players that were difference makers, or they were just better coached, or they had better numbers. But it just, it was night and day as far as how Arkansas looked from 1 year to the next, and how Orlando looked from 1 year to the next. So my point is that I had seen these two games from Orlando, one where they didn't look that great because, you know, they lost to Arkansas. Arkansas had 15 players. They looked organized. They looked well-coached. You know, they had some good athletes. But, you know, at the end of the day, they let 15 women just, you know, beat them flat out for four quarters. Then next year, they looked dramatically better. Like, I was blown away. I was like, holy crap. Like, Orlando Anarchy are the cream of the crop in D3. Right? Like, it's not even close. You know what I mean? Just like I think it's the same thing for Boston Renegades in D1. It was like Orlando Anarchy, and then there's a big drop, and then whoever's second place. That's how I felt last year. And then this year was you guys joined the league. You guys were in D3, and I was kind of, you know, watching the standings and the records and stuff like that, and I saw you guys were undefeated, and I think, well, your only loss was to Cali War, and it was like by 3 points or something.
It was 12-6, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So was that your only loss during the regular season?
Yeah, that was our only loss this year. It was 12-6.
Yeah.
You know, I think that everybody counted us out this year. I think they really were, you know, that Massey rating, I love hate that. But it's weird because it saw something in us that some of the girls didn't even think about, you know, themselves that way. And the coaching staff knows when they have a great team. And we knew that we had a great team this year. And that Cali War game was probably one of the hotter fought battles that we had had. Group of athletic ladies, disciplined players. It was a fist fight from the moment it started to the moment it ended. And then once it ended, both teams, you know, looked at each other with total respect. It was a great game. It was a great game.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the two games I wanted to talk to you about in particular. The fact that you're a D3 team, and Cali War is a D1 team. Of course, they have more players. Of course, they have bigger athletes, yada, yada, yada. They have coaches that probably have been coaching longer. The list goes on and on. But the fact remains, that game was in Cali, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in Los Angeles.
Yeah. So the fact remains, you went to Cali as a D3 team, played not only a D1 team, but the best D1 team in the Western Conference, right? And basically, it was almost a stalemate. I mean, 12-6 game, that's the one score game, could have went either way. I mean, that's just crazy, man. If you guys, I mean, like, once again, I'm not trying to kiss your ass, but like, that, just thinking about that as far as how good they are supposed to be. And even if you guys are which you guys proved you were the best D3 team, at the end of the day, there's a big difference between D1 and D3. And so just tell me a little bit more. Would you say that the fact that it was 12-6 was just because you guys came to play and you weren't intimidated? Was it that they were missing players? Was it they didn't take you seriously? You know what I mean? Was it what did you attribute that to? Because, I mean, a loss is a loss, right? I don't really believe in moral victories. I'm a very competitive guy, but still, I mean, 12-6 against the Western champs, the D1, is nothing to, you know, dismiss. So, what would you attribute that to?
You know, we had a lot of things to be proud about, but you're absolutely right. You know, a win's a win, a loss is a loss. And for us, we went out there, we were ready. We prepped accordingly. Our ladies watch film like hawks. They will point out anything that they think is relevant, which 95% of the time it's really not. But they watch a ton of film. They know who they're going against. Everybody has always downplayed us, has never really thought us to be the real deal. And we use that to our advantage this year. And the way we play is
chip on your shoulder.
It's really a chip on your shoulder, and then you double that with a 1940s offense, cloud of dust, you know. You got a lot of love-hate going on in between the tackles. And that's the way we want it. And when you're that team underestimates us and you start getting physically beaten up by us, your morality just goes straight to the floor. And I think a lot of teams just don't overcome that. And once that happened for Cali, them being a championship caliber team, I think they just stood up and stood their ground when they needed to.
Gotcha. It's a fair assessment. All right, so last two games we'll talk about before I'm going to wrap it up with a few quick questions before I let you go. I don't want to take too much of your time, but real quick, let's touch on the Utah Falcons because we both coached against them, and unfortunately, you know, we felt the wrath of their 60 players. So what do you think of them? I have my own opinion, but my opinion's boring. So what do you have to say about them?
You bring your 21, we'll bring our 21, we'll go at it. Because every time we've met up, we've always held them to the fewest points in the first quarter. Every time we've met up, because we know how to stop that offense. We run that offense, so we know how to stop that offense. And, so if they want to bring their best 21, we'll bring our best 21 any day. But, they can't stop us unless they got their big team. We usually stand our ground with them, and then it's usually our numbers that get us and tire us out. You know, second quarter, third quarter, that fourth quarter is really, you know, you could see the late commit they're all, but it's pretty hard to go against a 59-man roster, a 50-man roster.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But their offense, and don't let me take anything away from them, they're a great team. Absolutely great team, but they're definitely beatable. They have a big roster that just dominates the sport. And if you've got numbers, then you know all you have to do is just whittle away until the other team gets tired, and that's it. And don't get me wrong, that's there's nothing wrong with doing that. That's football. However, I think that if they were in a opportunity to be like in a Division I, then they probably should have stuck to the WFA and stayed in Division I. I wish them all the luck in the WNFC. Yeah. They're a great team. I think they're a great team. I think they have great players. I really wish the best for them.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I echo most of your opinion about them. Like you said, they have a huge roster, which is an advantage. A lot of women's teams don't have huge rosters. You know, they're well-coached. They have an offense that isn't rocket science, but they run it very well, right? It's very they run it like a well-oiled machine. And if your players are, God forbid, rookies, you know, or God forbid, not disciplined, then it can get hairy pretty quick. Like you said, they're a great team. I would actually put them up probably in the top 5 or top 10 in the nation, to be honest.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I put them at probably the top 5 in the nation. So they're really up there. But like you said, they are beatable. Texas has proven that a few different times. But it just takes the right mixture. You know, you got to be well coached. You got to have good numbers. There's nothing that can replace, you know, them having 60 players and you having 20. know, like you said, no matter how tough your girls are, no matter how conditioned they are or disciplined they are, the fact is, if you have a tough player and she goes at it with her number one, then it's a stalemate. And then their second string comes in and she's fresh. And the third string comes in and she's fresh. You know, eventually those fresh bodies are going to wear out your same body that's been on the field the whole time.
So, oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, war of attrition there. But, yeah, I got you. Yeah, let's talk about the WFA championship just a little bit more. So, as you know, the game was interesting, man. I didn't know what to expect. I thought that Orlando would win just because they were so impressive the year before. But also I was surprised to see that they, you know, traveled with, I don't know, if it was 15 or 16 players to the game. That was very surprising to me. But I wouldn't really use an excuse because, I mean, they played their asses off. You know, it wasn't like they got blown out because they didn't have enough players. So that was impressive. It was impressive that they were that competitive with that many players. I was surprised that they brought that, you know, amount of players. I expected more from them. You guys had a solid number of players. You guys were well-coached. They were well-coached. And then, you know, I hadn't seen you guys play before, so watching your offense, you know, was very effective against them. And you were able to, you know, stifle them on defense in the first half and get a nice little lead. And they came back up in the second half and made it a little bit interesting until you guys pulled away in the fourth quarter. But what is your take on that game as far, you know, looking back at it now that there's some time has passed? How do you look at that game as, you know, as far as from your own coaching standpoint and how it went?
I think that, you know, looking back at it, of course, you know, you look at all the mistakes that you made and you're like, man, why did I call that? Or why did we put ourselves in that situation or you know, those kind of things. But, you know, I look back on it and I'm like, you know, we really got to build off of what worked for us. And, we really, want to use that as a blueprint of what we're going to see next year. Like you, I think Tampa Bay was a great team as well.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I really thought we were going to see Tampa Bay in our schedule instead of Orlando. However, I think that just watching Orlando do their thing, because they're a great ball team and they do things, they do pass the ball really well. Just analyzing what they did, and going back through, you know, pretty much their playbook, we know what we need to do to win every game next year. You know, this, like I said, we played really conservatively in that game on defense. Our offense was just let's pound the rock, let's do all we can. I don't know if you noticed this or not, and I don't know if I should even be saying this, but we were trying to be we want to be the first championship game to never throw a pass. And but unfortunately we got to a situation where we had to throw a pass, but it was for a touchdown. So
how many passes did
we throw on the team? We were trying technically two or three, but two were for 2-point conversions, one for a touchdown.
Okay, gotcha. You almost achieved your goal. Only three passes.
Almost. Almost.
You almost went back to 1940. Not quite.
We almost did it. You know, one thing that attributed, you know, you got to understand, we had some great players in our team. We had, you know, Jasmine Plummer, Jesse Felker, both of those players, you know, broke 600 yards this year. You know, and so Jasmine had 14 touchdowns. Jesse had 11.
Was Jesse number one?
Okay,
yeah.
And Jasmine,
I was really impressed with 22. Yeah, I was really impressed with 1 and 22 for sure.
Yeah, and we had great blockers that actually want to go out and paint everybody they saw. So it's fortunate to have a line that really wants to get after it. You know, so those our line this year, this past year is really our ability, and we really attribute. And our ladies are so humble. Jasmine and Jesse, they do contribute that to the line, and they've made that vocal. And so, you know, it's not hard to keep producing for those people when they are, you know, they are humble on the team. We really just looking forward to see those people back, and then also to see how build on off of this line. You know, we're now got into what we want to do and how we want to do it. Let's just build upon it now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you, man. Yeah, I was really impressive to watch. Like I said, it was cool just to see it in person. You know what I mean? It's one thing to watch film or to, you know, see things, you know, box scores and final scores on WFA site, but to watch it in person is really to get litmus test of, you know, the strength of these teams and how well they're organized and coached and how well they play on the field. So that was really cool to see in person. So last few things before I let you go, real quick, I have to ask you because, as you know, I'm coaching in a different league now, and so I'm a pretty big fan of the WNSC. But what is your two cents in the WNSC as far as looking from the outside? What is your opinion of that league, or you know what have you been approached by them? Have you thought about going to them, or are you a WFA for life guy, or where are you at with all this stuff?
I don't think that I'll ever be a WNFC person. Nothing but respect for the league. I just don't think that that league would be beneficial for our team to join. There's a lot of teams in that league that have bigger rosters, you know, that mirror Utah Falcons, and so it's another one of those tests of. Do we want to put ourselves right back at the bottom or be a contender? Because I'm pretty sure we could be a contender. However, you know, conservatively, looking at what we've been doing, how the organization has been running, the organization running itself, it's working for us. So that's one thing that we want to keep Nevada Storm local, and I think that's one of the biggest concerns with that. But we definitely want to see the every league, pretty much, the league evolve and become a great entity. I really wish the best of luck for the WNFC.
Yeah, for sure. So that makes sense, man. I mean, it's a very, very honest answer. WNFC is doing a lot of cool things. Of course, I'm a little bit biased, but I like what they're doing. I like their long-term vision. But like you said, in WNFC, there is no divisions, right? So in WFA, there's D1, D2, and D3. And so it kind of, the cool part of that is that if you do have a smaller roster, right, you can compete with other people with small rosters. So it's an even playing field as opposed to more of a, you know, open format where everybody is in the same, you know, so if you're playing the Utah team or whoever it is, Seattle, San Diego, et cetera, and they have that big, big roster. It is what it is. So that makes totally sense. That's totally fair.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you know, yeah. On the flip side of that, I personally believe that WFA should go to two divisions. Yeah. And there's about three or four teams that are playing the D2 that have the roster size to be a D1, and then there is a D1 team that has a small roster size that should be a D3 team. I'm not calling anybody out. It's just one of those things where I think there needs to be a reshuffle, and myself, my assistant coach, Coach Adam, and our owner is really have really come together, and our owner's taken our president is taking charge of presenting kind of a realignment for the WFA teams and just giving our sense of, hey, what if this were to happen? Yeah. It makes a lot of sense, you know. So we're excited to see, and that's the only reason why Carrie didn't be on tonight is she's down at the updating tonight. So she has a lot on her plate, but when she comes back, I'm really anxious to what they our ideas.
Yeah, that's cool. Yes, now that we're informed friends, You have my number, and so if you don't mind,
that's right.
Appreciate that. Because, like, at the end of the day, man, you know, I, of course, the WNSC, it's a league that I'm in, but more important than anything else, I just love football. With women's football, I want to see it advance. I want to see the best product possible for fans. I want everything just to get better, right? So whether it be professionalism or, you know, the parity or the, you know, players eventually getting paid, coaches getting paid, just across the board. Just let's just max out the potential of the league and continue taking steps forward. So that's what I'm most invested in. That's why when I started this podcast, I wanted to reach out to, you know, all the teams that I respect, basically. Teams that, you know, exemplify excellence, which is what I, you know, kind of jive with. And so I don't care what league you're in. You know, of course, I'm going to cover the WFA and WNFC more than anybody else because those are the two national legitimate leagues. You know what I mean? It's not debatable. All the other leagues are either not established or they're not even close to, you know, coast to coast. And so, you know, it's not, you know, like I said, it's not debatable. It's just, that's where we're at right now. But
yeah, and the WNFC, I think you guys have some of the right ideas there. It's still in the growing phase. You guys have been there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so last two things before I let you go. Real quick, so for next season, touch on a little bit. You talked about how, you know, this year was kind of the blueprint. You know, you had a great season. You had a great team. You guys ended up winning the shift against Orlando. Only lost to Cali War, which was a great even match. So all in all, just a great season. So this season's definitely going to be a blueprint for the future. But what can you tell me about next season, aside from, you know, that Kerry's going to have some proposals for the league? Like, are you envisioning a bigger roster? Are you envisioning running different offense or defense? I know you said you're going to be a little bit less of a nice guy on defense. But what can you give us a peek on exactly for next season as far as your schedule or what you envision as of right now?
You know, we really want to focus on building on our offense. We with our offense that we have and what we're placing in this year, I think what we showed last year is about 40% of what we really got. And we want to turn that up this year, and we want to do that on defense as well. We've come up with or we even come up with anything, but we really want to take our system and just turn it up a notch and make sure that we're firing on the right cylinders. And that's another one of our things that we just strive to do is put the people in the right spots to succeed and not force anything to happen. And I think that's just one of the things that has worked for us. But coming out next year, we really want to come out strong. We want to have a couple of tough teams on our schedule. That's just that's what we want to do. One fantasy thing that we would love to just put out there. We would love to meet Nam Hong and play Boston. We would love to do that. So if that could happen in any shape or form, I think that'd be a great game to play.
Just to be clear, you're saying you have to play the Boston Renegades.
Oh yeah.
At a neutral location.
Neutral, and my friend and assistant coach and I, we have these crazy conversations, and we've actually looked on Google Maps, and Omaha is in the middle. So, I'm just going to put it out in the universe. Maybe someday, maybe in a couple years. Who knows?
Who knows?
Right. That'd be awesome to play in the, you know, University of Nebraska, something like that, you know, some neutral setting and see what happens. Because, you know, the three championship teams, it's three divisions. It's almost like we should play each other. Maybe that could be something, a little bit of feedback that we give the board. I think that'd be awesome if we could play championship to a championship team. I don't know. I just think something like that would be great for us.
Yeah.
But we do want a couple harder games on our schedule this year.
Okay. So do you feel like in the WFA, if you petition for that, you'll get it, or it kind of you just request what you request and you get what you get?
You know, I think we just put it out there and let them know. They have always been excellent about saying, hey, this is a great idea, or hey, let's revisit this some other time, you know, and that's and to me that's fair, because if every team wanted to make demands and wanted to do it their way, it would be so chaotic. Yeah. And so we just say, hey, did this happen? And if they say yeah, or hey, tell us more, you know, we do our best. You know, our coaching staff is just committed to making sure that we build a structure for football here in Nevada. And there's a couple teams that we really would love to help out that are kind of close to us, and help them with their football knowledge and just say, hey, let's build a better program together. So some of us coaches have been talking together in the background, and we're even thinking about going to a clinic together, or in our own clinic or round table, and saying, hey, this is what we do, what do you guys do, you know? How do you get through practice when XYZ happens, you know, those kinds of things. Nothing like, hey, what do I do against your, you know, 3-5 stack defense, you know? Nothing like that. More so, we just want to make sure that this sport grows in a positive manner.
Gotcha. All right, man, well, last question for you. Well, actually, it's not a question. It's an offer. So I always offer this to my guests at the end of the interviews. This is your chance to plug whatever the hell you want to plug. You can plug, you know, your dad's lawnscaping business. You can plug, you know, your website or your team, whatever you want to promote. My platform's your platform, so have at it.
I appreciate it. Hopefully you'll have me back. So next time you have me back, I'll do more of a personal plug. But I still want to do come out for us. Our next clinic is on the 28th. It's at Mira Loma Park here in Reno, Nevada. $10, 9 to 11 a.m. You're going to have some fun working out with some of the awesome, most awesome ladies you'll meet. We want to see how many people we can get there. If you're out of state and you want to play for us, give us a call. Let us know. Show us your interest. We'll help you out as much as we can, find you a job out here. We want to do everything we can to build this team to make it a presence in football year in, year out. Visit NevadaStormFootball.com for more information about our team and how to join, how to contribute, how to become a coach. Like us on Facebook, go to our Instagram, Nevada Storm Football. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, because we still consider ourselves a small team and a small program. TL, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, man. It's honestly my honor. Like I said, I'm a humble dude, and I just want to help out as much as I can. And so I love talking.
And that's where the call dropped. Wah, wah, wah. So the good news is we were literally within 2 minutes of ending the interview. And as you just heard, that was the first time I've heard it too. So there's only like once or twice where the reception went out. And that's kind of weird, because when the parts that it missed, those are things that like I could hear him clearly. So I'm not sure why the recording app that I have didn't pick that up. Maybe it's just part of the app, to be honest. I'm just starting to think that maybe it's just the app isn't, you know, perfect, and that it's going to record the reception perfectly the whole time. So the one part that I do want to mention to you that he said is when he was referring to Kerry. Kerry is the owner of the Nevada Storm, and he was saying that actually I think last night when we did the interview, she was at the owner's meeting for the WFA, which is why she couldn't do the interview, which is why he did it. And so the cool thing he mentioned was their organization kind of has some ideas for the WFA as far as like, you know, the divisions and kind of shaking stuff up and doing a reorg as far as, like you said, he would prefer there to be two divisions instead of three. And so I'm looking forward to hearing what transpires from that. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, just in conclusion, we're going to wrap it up. Feel free to laugh at me for my call dropping at the end. like I said, we're only 2 minutes away from wrapping that up, so it is what it is. But it was a great interview. It was awesome talking to Chris. I enjoyed it. I got to learn more about him, more about the team, and have even more respect for them than I did before. And he's just a really stand-up guy in general. And so I'm kind of grateful that I kind of added him as a friend of mine too, because that'll be – hopefully we can stay in touch throughout the years and, you know, he'll be a good part of my circle. But, yeah, so that's about all I have for you guys tonight. Hope you guys enjoyed the guest. I hope you guys enjoyed the normal format of the thought of the day and then football talk with a guest. But as always, I'm going to strive to get better every week. So I can guarantee you that next week's guest is going to be enjoyable. Let's just say that. Not that Chris wasn't. All my guests are enjoyable. But this next guest, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it was supposed to be the first guest I ever had, and that person was not able to do that for reasons I'm not going to get into, but it's going down next week. And so all three of my first guests have all been awesome. The fourth guest is going to be awesome as well. And so as always, I appreciate your support, appreciate your time. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'll talk to you soon.